driven by the revenue performance in the first quarter, we achieved the stakeholder engagement, risk analysis, planning, and resource mobilization. And that would be the Memeza Community Alarm Solution, which was developed for piloting, and it was initiated, and Gauteng Department of Community Safety and Education and Social Development have also come on board, and the pilot has grown. We've moved from the 40 units that we initially implemented to another 560 units. So that was achieved. And then we also needed to initiate two projects that we identified through the awards program for replication. That was achieved. We identified those two projects for replication. We can provide the detail later if the honorable members want us to get into the detail. There's again on solution support and incubation, we needed to initiate another pilot, but a multi-year project rather than a short-term one. And what we needed to do was partially achieved. That would have been stakeholder engagement, risk analysis, and drafting the project plan, including resource mobilization. And that project is a project that's going to be implemented or piloted at the Helen Joseph Hospital, and it's on energy efficiency. We were delayed there because we have had to solicit donor funding. We solicited the funding. It was just only transferred to us recently, and that is why it was partially achieved. But in terms of the stakeholder engagement, risk analysis, and drafting of the project plan, we achieved that because of the initiation. Now we just received the funding. The honorable members, I trust, are aware that we have a multimedia innovation center where we receive public servants. They come through the center for capacity building and their own processes re-engineering. And instead of 75 visitors, at least 75 of visitors coming through the center, we only got 29. And so that was partially achieved. And to move on to the sub-program called Enabling Environment, the first target would have been at least four projects per category. We have four categories for the awards program, and we needed to have at least four projects per category identified and recognized in a formal award ceremony. For the first quarter, we needed to launch the program because the awards program starts at the beginning of the year with the launch and the soliciting of entries, which is the program that we use to unearth and find the existing solutions around the country. So we had the launch in May 2015, yes, in Northwest, and it was attended by about 136 officials. So that was achieved. And the second one was to host the annual Public Sector Innovation Conference and stakeholder engagement on collaboration. Stakeholder engagement happened, the conceptualization of the theme and everything else. I'm happy to report that, in fact, the conference started yesterday. We had a full day yesterday, and it is on today for another full day. So that has been achieved. And we have the journal that's called Ideas That Work. It's the South African Public Sector Innovation Journal, which has to carry at least five case studies for learning, and the copies has to be disseminated across the public service or the public sector and to the academic institutions and other international and continental stakeholders. That was achieved. We got that issue, Volume 6, Issue 1, published. And we then needed to host or to organize two workshops for public officials, and we only managed to hold one. In fact, one was held was it not last week, we just managed to, but at the time the first quarter ended, we had only managed one workshop. But I'm happy to report that we have now held the second workshop. It was on the last week that we held it. And again, on enabling environment, we host the, we are the regional online center on for UNPAN, the UNPAN portal, United Nations Knowledge Management portal, and we are responsible for the coordination and uploading of content for all the studied countries. And we exceeded we exceeded the 300 that we had promised. We managed to upload 327 items, so that was achieved. And we again, to ensure that our participation in the UNPAN, the United Nations Public Administration Network, is successful, we host an annual workshop for all SADC member states, and that was achieved. We held it in June 2015. Excuse me. We also promised to participate in at least two regional and international programs. That was partially achieved because we only got to attend one, and the next one is actually next week, and we are going to be holding it. So by the end of next week, we should have achieved, rather than partially achieved. On the issue of human resources, if the honorable members will allow me, I would like to request the CFO to talk to this issue from here, leading us into the finances.
Thank you, honorable board members. The student next difference is not included in the presentation that was distributed, as this request came through last night, that we should just include something on our matters. The slide just gives you an indication of the number of posts that we have from the establishment. Currently, we've got in the administration program 15 posts, and in the innovation 20 posts, total of 35 posts. On administration, 11 of those posts are permanent, and innovation 12. We've got 3 posts vacant in administration and only 1 in innovation program. Additional to the establishment, we've got the 1 post in program 1 and in program 2, 4. This additional to the establishment post are currently funded by the General Budget Support Funds. It's not from the voted funds. They've appropriated some funding to us for a period of 3 years. We've currently got 5 of those posts that's been sold, and the other is only 4. For the other one is from our own budget. It's an 11-month contract post. We've got of those posts, there's also 2 that is vacant, and we are planning still to fill it during the financial year. And then we've got 1 official that has been assigned to the CPSI by the Office of the Minister for a period. The second table below just gives you an indication, a breakdown of the information I just gave you on the different sub-programs. Here you can see on the vacant post, that is the permanent vacant post that is vacant there, we've got 1 in CRM, the Corporate Resource Management, we've got 2 in the Office of the CFO, and then we've got 1 in the Research and Development areas. Just to give you an indication, because the request came through that we should indicate the post on SMS levels that has been vacant. Currently, we've got only 1 post that is vacant on SMS level, but we are in the process of abolishing that post as well. Due to financial constraints. We obviously with the submission should go to the minister within the next 2 or 3 weeks. The other part that is vacant is, like I said, on the resource management and the office of the CFO. The interviews was held, and we are actually waiting for the outcome of the security pre-screening. We anticipated that the appointment should take place during October. And then it's just an indication of the post that has been funded through the Canadian General Budget Support Fund. On the expenditure, the first quarter expenditure amounted to about 5.1 million rand, of the allocated 29 million rand, which presents 17.68% of the total budget. It is indicated there how the expenditure and the allocations is per sub-program. Administration is just going to highlight the two programs. At administration, we've got a total allocation of 14 million rand. 1.8 million was spent for the first quarter. It is a little bit less than we anticipated due to the fact that we couldn't fill the two posts of the three posts in administration that we anticipated before, actually quite earlier, but the verification is taking a bit longer than we anticipated. Another issue that relates to slower expenditure there is we are in the process of securing additional accommodation for the additional staff that is starting. We are seriously running out of accommodation space, and there was quite a delay from Public Works to secure the additional accommodation. That is, hopefully it will be sorted out within the next 2 months. So there's a little bit of money that was projected to be spent there that hasn't been spent, but it won't result in an underspending because the money will definitely be going to the tendered installation expenditure that we also seen a shortfall on. In innovation program, we've got an allocated amount of 14 million, almost 15 million rand there. The actual expenditure there was 3.2 million rand. The spending is on target there. There was a small payment of about 151,000 rand that wasn't spent due to a plan that was not processed from Innovation Hub, but otherwise that program's expenditure is on target. The expenditure, this is just an indication of the expenditure per economic classification for the first quarter. On compensation, 3.3 million was spent, goods and services, 1.8 million, transfers and subsidies for license fees, there was a 17,000 rand, and that adds up to the 5.1 million rand that was spent. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
All right. Thank you very much. Kala, what is your total budget?
The total budget is 29 million, right?
29 million?
Yes.
Listen, that's why we are able to spend it like that. I wonder if you could manage bigger budget than that. You will be able to spend it now. And then let's go to the 13%. You said that's 13% outstanding. Budget that was not spent. Was it 13% or I missed?
The 13% relates to targets not met in the previous financial year.
Targets not met in the previous financial year.
Yes.
And then how are you going to rectify that? Okay, note the question. Note the question. So that we should avoid a dialogue. How are you going to rectify that? Make sure that your target meet your finance plan. I'm looking at your project, and I feel that they are not that much service delivery orientated. You know, they are not bringing effectiveness. I personally feel that way. I will tell you why I'm saying this. Recently, we just came from an oversight visit, and we visited hospitals. People are still subjected to unbearable, unjustified, long queues. You wake up, 6 o'clock, you are there already. The only time when we could have been able to consult with the doctor and be able to get your medication, it's around 6 o'clock in the evening, around 5 o'clock. You go early because you think it will be easy for you to go in and out. Sometimes they don't even carry lunch boxes. You understand? So we went there, we found, we visited how many hospitals? Two, eh? we found that as a common practice, and it is really something that I thought one of the public service. No, these people who win your awards, what do you call them? Maybe they're one of them. I don't know if you've had that type of a proposal. Because the way it is, you see that there's no correlation. Departments are not talking to each other. People come there for their routine checkups. They have appointments. They do not just wake up and go there. They have appointments. But you go there just for them to get your file as a pack. You wait for more than 3 hours. If you arrive at 7, you get your file around 11. After that, you must then go through for the doc, for consultation. And then they know you are there for high blood. You know, come on, chronic diseases that they go there on a monthly basis. You know, but I'm saying somewhere somebody must have written something about that. You know, if anyone can write, I don't know who's going to win the award this year and what informed the winning. But I don't know who's going to win, but whoever's going to win, I would definitely give an award to a person who's going to come up with an innovation like that, you know. So please bear that in mind. Hospital queues are still very long. We expect you to come up with something that will make sure that dispensary knows that PISMA is coming. When I get there, my file is there already. I'm able to go to a doctor. After that, the pharmacist, they know that I'm coming for this particular medication. Either maybe we should change from using this manual thing to electronic. It will help. Because it's about the people and giving people a decent service that they deserve. It's doable. We can do that. And you know what? I must also say, that intervention here, Majamini, say, no, I will go, let them move here. Then all of a sudden, within 30 minutes, the line disappeared. So we want to see you, especially on points where service delivery is implemented. We spoke about 35 posts. Oh, let me rather say, where you spoke about posts, I wish you could have had your organogram. It would have enabled us to be able to see which are the missing boxes, whether are they service delivery orientated, how are they going to complement your work, whether they are necessary or not. I think it was on your human resources, né? You said you had 9 vacant posts. How are they going to improve your services? Do you really need those 9 posts to be filled? The issue of accommodation, I think it's time that we need to start thinking differently, especially that you are an innovation institution. You don't employ me and I don't have an office space. Then you recruit me, I come on Monday, diploma, say, I have nothing to do. Because public works are also approved. So it's about planning. You think about that before you can recruit somebody. So that when I come join your institution, I should understand the culture of working. But if I come there for the first time, I don't have any responsibility. Six months down the line, I'm still waiting for public works to approve office space. So a culture of working is not there already. I am going to form part of people who are just going there to sign their presence and not do anything in terms of changing the lives of our people. Those are my few comments. This season is going to be number one, and then the order. It will come this way. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. For all your abilities, you seem to be a mind reader as well. I wrote down five things that I wanted to raise, and the first one is I want to know about the prioritization of projects. You say you're demand-driven, you're committed to responding to identified and clearly articulated service delivery challenges. Now, the chairperson has just highlighted what I think is one of the most widespread service delivery challenges, and that is queue management. And it's not for me to come up with the solutions today, but I can think of various ways and means in which we can assist people that have to wait for, well, hopefully they won't even have to wait. But they must, yes, I've got some very interesting ideas. For example, just a graph showing people how many people are coming at 6 o'clock, how many people are coming at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, how many people are coming at the last day of the month, how many people are coming on a Monday, how many people are coming on a Friday, so that those that do have the ability to choose when they want to go to that specific clinic or whatever, can choose a MOC or Home Affairs office or whatever, can choose a time when the staff is not under so much pressure. The second, and there are many such things. For example, I can just imagine that the logistics of getting medicine to the public in South Africa must be an enormous service delivery challenge. And I'm convinced that with the growth in knowledge in the field of logistics, that there's an enormous field that's waiting to be covered. Electronic document handling in the public service. We've all been to so many, whether it's hospitals or the compensation fund or wherever, you trip over all the files, filling the passages and offices of public servants. And it must be so demoralizing to go to your office every day and you see these enormous physical heaps of paperwork waiting for you. We've got so many challenges. I want to just highlight two more. The whole issue, for example, of copper theft. Now, some people say it's a policing problem, but my question is, are there no good practices in terms, for example, of design? If you put down a copper cable, is it not wise, for example, to cover it perhaps with concrete or something like that? And where are the innovation projects, and what is the CPSI doing to then find the good practices and highlight those good practices? But then, Chair, the last one that I've got here and that I'm really missing from the work of the CPSI. Probably the biggest challenge, and we've had a debate on it yesterday in Parliament again, is the huge unemployment problem in our country, especially the unemployment amongst the youth. And I can just imagine that there must be so many labor-intensive projects that the CPSI can champion. Because that is what we want to do. We need to put people in places of work, and I believe that there are so many projects undertaken, be it by national, provincial, but especially local government, where we can tackle this problem. And then I find it a little bit disturbing if I see that the CPSI is only concentrating on the high flying, the ICT kind of projects, which may be very nice because it doesn't dirty your hands, and but innovation is not only technology. That is the point I want to make, and I really want to ask of the representatives here, what do you use as your criteria to identify, as you call it on your website, the service delivery challenges? And really, is the Lugbron project, which apparently is a project for e-learning, especially in technical skills, is the transfer of x-ray documents over the internet for a specialist that's sitting far from the hospital, etc. Are those projects really the ones that are in highest demand in our country at this point in time? And is this really the one where you believe you should be concentrating your energy? And my question is then, why are you concentrating on these projects and not some of the others, such as what I have mentioned? Thank you so much, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson.
Just to build on the points my colleague mentioned about the triage system in hospitals. Now, I know the Western Cape has implemented some sort of system to make triage work better. I just cannot for the life of me remember what it is. So I think you shouldn't let politics get in the way of sharing good ideas between the different governments in South Africa. I'll find out what it is, and I think it'll be something interesting. Provided, so that it can be implemented in other hospitals, so queues can be dealt with. And then my second question is about the target of 5 cases for service delivery innovations. I think there's service delivery, lots of service delivery problems, and there's a lot of space for innovation there. So I just wanted to know what the other cases are that you've identified, if at all. Thanks.
Tja, meneer Van Westhuis heeft het een vraag gesteld.
Ja.
En dan willen we opvolgen, maar we blijven.
Ah,
dank u. I just wanted to demonstrate that it is not a domain of certain people. Yeah. Chairperson, following on the question of Honourable Final Station on the queue management, I just wanted to check whether is there something that is done with regard to the queue mashups. Because while we manage the queue itself, we would expect the clients to be comfortable as they are being attended to. Are there any, is anything done to check how the queue marshals do their work? And then, I know for a fact, that's my second question, Chair. I know for a fact that Soweto people are a little obsessed with witchcraft. A problem has been identified and about residence taxation, especially in Soweto. But unfortunately, what they have employed, that is in the service of the owls, half of them, or 3/4 of them, have been killed because they are associated with witchcraft. Now, that has been the solution. Going forward, what does the department do after having investigated, identified the solution, and then what do you do going forward? What happens after that? Yeah, I think, yeah. And then the last question, Chair. It is said the capacity allocated to this target was reassigned to the finalization of another pilot project. Why the transfers? What is the problem? Do you have a problem with human resource? Where lies the problem that you end up having to transfer the capacity to another project? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, firstly, I would like to thank your office for giving a thought on this exercise together with the team that you decided. Because what I'm seeing here, if we had this exercise towards looking at whether we must take the money or we must give more money, I'm telling you we're going to take the money. From the 21 million we gave last time, let me increase it to 29, we're going to take it back to 21 million because seemingly imali akayazi ukuthi singaba yenzeni. So on that note, really, I say thank you to your office. Now, the other honourable members, they just said, certain communicate to the other honourable members, that they've touched on very important issues here. But mine, because this exercise is more of assisting the department Nangok. A blood in the out of home. Because one of the objective of this exercise is to actually assist departments to, when we come back for your street plans and the PP for BRR in October, then you know exactly that you are on the right track. We said to you, my baby, your most important key performance area is R&D on service delivery. And I remember it very well because I was among the people that insisted that the late minister must make sure that he gives you more money. Because without the information, we're not going to make sure that we're not going to be able to say, here are the achievements and here are the shortcomings. And your unit plays that role within the DPSA. Don't remove your focus on that goal. And right now, it is not you, it's your CFO or whoever is actually shifting you from the focus. Now, the Honorable Sandam asked about the 5 cases. And we are even saying these 5 cases are related to service delivery. You know the policies that are based on improving the service delivery. So what we are now, you are supposed to tell us today is to say, you know, I've gone through the Batubidi principles. And I realized that Batubidi principles, according to the research, is not achieving what it was designed to achieve. I'll tell you one question. We go to one hospital. I ask the CEO of the hospital. I say, Batubidi principle, number 5, CEO, what does it say? The CEO doesn't even know what is number 5. Instead, he starts shouting at me, then we're shouting to the wrong person. Now, your research was going to guide us to be able to say from what the president said last week about the MTSF, and we say on the other side is the DPSA, this is what our innovation unit said on the research. Then because they are also looking after the DPME, that's why these departments were combined, because they are actually married. Whether the bride comes first before the groom is another story, but they were married because of that. That you say, you know what, when the research says, the outcome of research says this, and we shall improve this. Do you understand the alignment of this? Not what you are talking about right now. That's why you can say, when you get out of this, I'm going to take my whip because I'm a whip and whip you. Now, this is what you are supposed to do. Research, look at the existing policies and look at its effectiveness, the shortcomings, through research. Instead, you are taking somebody, you second somebody. I don't know, this is what your CFO presented there, where it says seconded or transfer one person. If you're not in your head, just the whipper head then, because this is what she has presented this morning. Now, Honorable Chairperson, there's somewhere under the program, R&D, right? Oh, Baba, Ndombela asked about the capacity. We need to know about that. Capacity allocated to this target was reassigned. Where was the problem? You see, it actually confirms what I'm saying. You fail to prioritize, you move the focus from the goal, and the result, you find yourself having an abundance of the people then didn't know what to do with them. This is what we are seeing now. So you need to tell us exactly what is happening there. And members of the community, alarm solution. This government took a decision that we shall stop duplication of services as government. How is Menezi different from whistleblowers? The whistleblower promises, the project in which this government owns is a whistleblower. How is it different? And there's another one which is sitting in the presidency hotline. So now you're coming with Menezi, the third one. What is the objective, all right? Now, and then the last one, Chairperson, I want to go to the money. You see, Chairperson, Mahathir, can I propose, I don't want to say anything, can I propose that from that door, you don't sleep, you make sure that you focus on the research, you make sure that you take up all the policies that provide the service delivery in this country, you do the research on them, you say what are the shortcomings, how can you improve. I'm telling you, if you can do that, you'll see that you don't have the money. You're actually going to realize that you need more money. Because that is the job. Innovation stands for that. Stands for that thing. The chair is saying, maybe we need to move from the manual capturing of data from our hospital, from our services. She is so right. You know, we went to Kalafong Hospital. I was in the office of the Minister of Health in 1988. We did that filing. It is still there, untied as is. But we're sitting with innovation in one of our units. And for us, can't we move? Can't we move? The doctor is sitting here, and we have to train our doctors. That information has to come from you. What the doctor is examining, there should be a capturer. Who's capturing what the doctor has said so that it reaches the pharmacist? As the patient comes, the system is calling the patient to come and collect the treatment. If the banks can do it, if other people can do it, why can't we just do it? So that's why I don't want to say, I was asking Honorable Lissoma, when did you employ your CFO? Now, I don't know when did she come to department, but since you still have to learn. All right. You just have to know how to put your budget. When in this committee we talk about allocation of budget, and I'm looking at your EME, and I'm looking at what you have spent thus far, it's an embarrassment. 6 months, you have only used how much? 7 million rand. 7 million rand. I can tell you now. I pass arithmetic, not mathematics. So I don't use calculator to calculate. I use my brains. So the financial skills that she employed you to do, they're not assisting her. You're not assisting her to say, you know what? You guys, you have to push them because I say, oh. You are looking after the sisters. You need to say, but remember we went to the committee and asked for this matter, but you guys, what are you doing? There's something wrong that you're doing. You are to assist her. But right now you're not. Actually, you're coming to ask the appeals. You're coming to give us the information that I didn't. Thank you, Chairperson. So, thanks so much, Chair. Probably, Mahathir, let me appreciate your presence. It goes a long way, I must tell you. It will assist moving forward. Probably, Chair, I'll propose that through our portfolio committee secretary, she gets our program in advance all the time. But also, Sister Lee would advise. We share the same thing. I will say, do also take issues that are raised by the portfolio committee and make sure that they find its expression when you come back and report. It will help. The issue of e-governance, we raised it last time. You even made an example with the Smart Card Home Affairs project. But you haven't shifted from show and tell of Home Affairs to something else, because they must be something else that you are able. So you say, two things now I can show and tell. That it was because of our initiative. That's an advice. Chair, I would like also to recommend that we did raise this matter also, that we would love, I haven't had the chance that she has been invited by your entity to come to your strategic workshop. And when I raised that one, even all the departments, safe to say, without blaming you, is to say we did suggest that because it will help. Because some of the things that we raise, when other entities and departments come and report to us, which also overflow or have a spillover to other entities, in particular could serve in terms of service delivery plans. Departments and other spheres of government are grappling to come up with the service delivery plans that are implementable. That will also demonstrate that it's business unusual. The change management in the old school. I'm saying that's your role, that you need to assist us to say how do you, picking up on what Honorable Madam have raised, and also the oversight observations in terms of the queue management and all that. You might wonder why are we raising that. It's because also you should have an interest in terms of DPSA's areas of focus in terms of service delivery. What are the critical areas that you can zoom in? It's better when you come back to us to say that you want money because you want to improve 1, 2, 3.
So I've covered, okay. Actually, Chair, in terms of the issue, which is that fourth point, is the issue of which we say we always raise it lightly in terms of conferences and seminars and all that. Probably also when they come back, Chair, in 3 months' time, can they please also give us valuable money for those conferences and also those awards or awards recipients? What more have they done to maintain and upscale that creativity? Because talent management, when they go back to their respective provinces and municipalities and departments, it must also have arm raising and proposing, suggesting to you to say, you must have a forum twice a year with all the DGs, but also focusing on those departments that we have made our priorities, this committee, which have failed to come up with service delivery plans and even submitting and implementing them, let alone that they failed even to implement their predetermined objectives, so that you do have a chance. They're about four, they're about 5 years. You need to then get, that's a research that you need to know which are those departments if you haven't paid any attention to those departments. My colleagues have spoken to the issue of queue management. All departments that have a walk-in contact with the public, it might have to say which is the technology that will save cost. It could be expensive, but moving forward would have value for money. Because the queue workers, which Honorable Domela has raised, is part of that. You don't need your own body to do that. A machine can do it. At the end of the day, it's just scrolling in terms of your spreadsheet to tell you how many people have come, what issues that they raise, and also to be able to manage it, to make follow-ups and all that. But I think that's where your part in terms of innovation, we should also assist us. Chairperson. Other than that, and I hope they will work and what we are raising today to improve, because it's not enough to have a clean audit report and also just fast track even to achieve your predetermined objectives at the end of the year if you don't focus inward in terms of the country and the government in particular. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much to the honourable members for all the issues that have been raised, and I appreciate the opportunity for us to just respond and give some clarity where we can. I think the biggest one I would like to start with is the one on research and policy analysis. Just to say, we have three components, and yes, one of them is R&D, research and development. But that is research and development within the context of innovation. And as we say, we are demand-driven, we are challenge-driven. When challenges, because departments bring their challenges to us, or we identify the challenges that relate to service delivery. Once the challenges have been identified, the R&D unit's job is to
dig deep into the challenges that are brought to us so that we don't address the, so that we address the root causes. We get to the bottom of what is really causing those services deliver the challenges, and then we address them. We come up with innovations that address those. In DPSA, there's a whole branch which is bigger than the CPSI, which is really responsible for research. Their name is Research and Policy Analysis. So I think that was the discussion with the late minister, that we don't duplicate and create confusion, because they are responsible for research and analysis, whereas the R&D, our R&D is to focus on, yes, once the challenges have been identified, we get benefit from that branch, whatever documents they are, when they are really operational, the documents that will come out of them will inform us in the way that, in the same way that the Public Service Commission State of the Public Service Report tells us, and there's something that comes from the M&E Department. They bring a lot of information to us, and we respond to the issues that they raise. So I just thought I should, with jurisdiction, explain that the research and policy analysis is a mandate of the DPSA, which is a huge branch that was, I think, launched last year. And I think that's why there was a little bit of, yes. So that would be, that was the first thing I wanted to just, yes.
No, Chairperson, I think, you know, what Ms. Khadile is actually saying, then it's actually giving us a light to us, because it means there's a serious problem. It's either in the interministerial policies, because if the chair, all the departments, they've got their research units, all of them, all right? All of them, they've got their research units.
Mm.
And then, but yours is to come up with a system saying, based on the research that has been taken, this is the better system that you use. We need to understand this one, all of us as members of this committee, so that you advise properly, because if it means you need to call all these ministers, then there's a problem here. The money is not adding value. The money that is we have to go to the definition of innovation. What does it mean? Because I'm saying the definition of innovation. I really request you, Chair, that can you just deal with this one? Because there's some misleading here. I'm not saying you're misleading us, there is some confusion that was made.
Mm. Thank you, Chair. Yes, we will talk to the issues. If you, once, let's say the Department of Education or the DPSA comes up with an issue that says one policy is not working, and so it impacts on maybe the delivery of water. We then take that, and then we go and investigate why there is that service delivery block, and why that particular service is not being delivered, so that we can come up with innovative solutions to that problem. If the Department of Education Research Unit were to come up with a challenge, or we pick up a challenge, we verify with the department, like we found that at some point the visually challenged teachers were being used as clerks instead of teaching, although they were fully qualified. We then worked with the Department of Education. We dug deep to find out what were the challenges. We brought the visually challenged teachers on board, and the National Council of for the Blind. We found that, yes, the blind teachers were not being allowed to be the professionals that they were employed to be. They were not getting access to their documents, their circulars, and so on. So we came up with a solution then, which allowed them to be able to access the website, to be able to download documents, to get access to the circulars, and to print on Braille and all of that. So that's what we do. But research needed to. That would be just one example.
Can I just read the definition of innovation?
Yes.
Innovation is a new idea.
Yes.
More effective device,
mm-hmm.
or a process. I can't continue.
Mm-hmm.
An idea, the device, the process.
implemented, the idea must be implemented for it to be an innovation.
So, Chino, this is a chairperson. It's not your problem, I think.
Yes.
There's a problem on this side. Innovation, either the way we design the department is not doing what it's supposed to do. The definition is the idea. There should be a device in case whatever that has been, then they say, you know, instead of capturing the patients manually, she said, use an electronic capturing. Then that's a device. You say to help, use their creative in other ways. And this is what the chair said, we don't get that creativity which is going to ensure that effective, efficient service delivery. Now, but what I hear from you, maybe we need to sit with the minister, because the vision us as this committee does not meet the money that you have allocated. You know, we thought, this is what you're going to get. You're going to get, I told you the other time, Mama Khadi, I said you're going to get and say, you know what, this is, we have came with we're using this process, this is not the new process that we've advised the department to use, because these are the challenges that you've discovered. You know what, Chair? Mama Khadi, there was also a suggestion. The Department of Technology, in particular in terms of they are attacking young people, they can also assist, because you know me at my age, working for the department, I cannot be creative in terms of technology because I'm scared of technology. I'm not saying that.
Thank you. We work with all the departments, including the ICTs, because one honorable member made a very critical observation that IT is not innovation. It really isn't. IT is a great enabler. So, but they are, yes, as you say, there are people that are responsible for driving, for getting the ICT space ready for us to be innovative, to use, and that is why we partner with the Department of Science and Technology as well, to make sure that we benefit from their gains. They come up with software systems that are absolutely brilliant, and then they come to us and say, where can we use them? So we've partnered with them to say, let's move from a needs basis or a challenge basis to say, there is a challenge. Let's then work on coming up with a solution. But I just want to say, on the issue of long queues, a few years ago, we found through the hours program a brilliant solution. It's called the Kaizen solution. I will invite, if, with your permission, my colleagues to actually come in as well. But we came up with a good solution that we shared amongst various hospitals. We had that solution presented to many hospitals. We were invited to KZN because they had a queue management system. What we found, and then this is what we always usually find, that sometimes it's not even an innovation that is needed. Within 2 days, we sorted out queues in two hospitals in Durban and in Gauteng. The challenge that we are facing is the scaling up. We get, right now in the conference here in Cape Town, because it's still running, our conference, you have, I think, about 7 hospital HODs. We're pulling them together to say, please learn from one another. We have found the solution for you. It's working. The queues, we actually got an email one day from a citizen saying, please thank those people who crossed the system, because within 2 days there was no queue in one of the hospitals in Johannesburg, the same in Durban. What we need is for the health department to then work with us to get all the hospitals to buy into the system. So we are really demand-driven. On the issue, a member mentioned the distribution of medicine. We have found very interesting innovative solutions. One was a straightforward one. A young man who started a small company, because we are also very committed to also getting young entrepreneurs working, where he used this. He just started with a bicycle, formed a partnership with hospitals, and he delivers. He delivers medicine. It has become a big network, and they're all doing this. They're delivering medication. And recently, we are now busy replicating a pilot. The Helen Joseph that has come up with a medicine dispensing unit, so that citizens are going to be able to go to a mall, or we are actually putting one up at Maponya Mall, And they will go to a machine, a teller machine, like where you get money or where you get your cool drinks. They are going to be able, there is such a solution already that's been developed. We are replicating it. They will use their identification and they will be able to collect their medication from the dispensing unit instead of going to the hospital. So we are bringing to the fore all these solutions, and we are just working with the Department of Health. Yesterday, we had the DG of Health in the conference talking about solutions, and in the issue of learning from the Western Cape, we have the Grotekier, the Bursa Center with numerous health. They are busy exhibiting at the conference as we speak, and we have forming a partnership with them. We are going to be working together, and we are organizing a health-specific workshop. We are going to exhibit all these. So there's a lot that we'd like to share. We have come up with solutions to the queue. What we need is political support for us. We, you know, we've had a turnover of ministers. Who are going to force the other sector, the health department, for instance, to adopt these solutions. We're not struggling, honorable members, to spend money. This is 3 months we're talking about. And it's not that in, how much is it? We spent, yes, of a budget of only 29 million. She can give the detail, but we really are not struggling. It's what we had spent in 3 months, and of course the first 3 months were quite slow. And on the filling of posts, is it 9 posts? Those that we have not filled are not permanent posts, they are contract posts that Treasury has given us to support us where they saw we're struggling in terms of project management. The MEMEZA project is actually to address the response time by the police when a rape or any other incident of crime is being reported. That's what's happening. It's a little bit different from the example that the member gave. So that is to decrease the response time. And we've received a few good stories from that pilot that we've done where women, people have been saved from rape because they just trust the scene. And before, it's the community safety organizations and the police. We really are working, we're moving from the MDP, we're taking from the MDP, we are taking from the Public Service Commission, from the DPSA, from all the other and the issue of unemployment, yes, we're working very closely with the Innovation Hub. We identify young entrepreneurs who have good ideas. We then refer them to the Innovation Hub because the Innovation Hub has space where they can move in for, say, 6 months. They are given mentorship. They are given funding, seed funding, to kickstart their project. And that is how they are coming into the, you know, into the market. And we have that project, I don't know if we've talked to that project, the Inland Water Safety Project, where we've had in 4 dams around the country, one is in Cape Town, wash bays constructed. No, no. One is in Cape Town. It actually cuts across 5 places. One is in the Northern Cape, one is in Limpopo, one is in KZN. We've had wash bays constructed there as a pilot, and so the boaters who drag invasive plants into the water, into the dams, which block the system, and the department has to pay millions, to clean the dams and all of that. Now we're stopping that, and there's a huge saving already identified, because now the boats have to be washed. There's a system that we've come up with in collaboration with the Department of Water Affairs, Department of Transport, Department of Environmental Affairs, FEPS, and there's like 5-6 departments that we've brought together who, we must say, had admitted that in 30 years they had never sat together for them to just understand their mandates. It's contributing to PAHESA. Now, in terms of the wash bay, there are 300 dams where at least 3 people from the communities are going to be employed. And if you count the 300 dams, these people are going to be employed to run these wash bays that we have had constructed. It's a pilot, which is very good. We came up with an incident management system that Water Affairs or Environment Affairs have implemented across the country. And now they have management plans that they're implementing as a result of this project. So we really work with the departments
And it, we're saving a lot of money. We're creating employment, influencing the creation of employment through this. And the honorable member said, not only ICT, you have permaculture gardens, which are just straightforward, and everybody does them. We found one in Limpopo where the school principal, the primary school principal, feeds neighboring, what you call, no, yes, she feeds the schools, but then there are old age homes and so in the area that don't have resources, they feed them. What they've done is they've identified, what she's done, identified destitute families, and she employed parents from those families to come and work in the permaculture garden. She has a chicken farm, and she pays them a stipend so that they can feed their children more and buy uniforms. It's a very good one that we took to the Eastern Cape, that we took to Helen Joseph Hospital as well. And they started a permaculture garden, which, yes, they use for fresh vegetables, but also for therapy for stroke patients and for psychiatric patients as well. And when they are released from hospital, they accompany them home. There's a staff to go and start gardening for them so that the therapy continues and so on. So we have, and we get all of them out of the awards. Otherwise, we would not know about them. The Lifgrown one, which is the e-learning one, seriously, it's where a school that is equipped connects five poor schools, outlying schools, through wireless, so that then when a lesson is being delivered, let's say in a school in Stanton, if one was to be done there, Alex and other would be covered. They would be receiving exactly the same lesson, real time, at the same time, by this best, so they build the capacity of the other teachers, and you can see the impact from 0% in those schools that have no teachers and no equipment, 0% to 99% maths and science. Not IT, maths and science. And that we are now replicating in the Eastern Cape. Gauteng has just adopted the interactive smart board. And, you know, so they, I would like you to talk to the issue. Please.
It's quite commendable to hear how means are being done to deliver. But one becomes worried as I continue to listen to Mom Tuli there. I don't know whether Nyambos would have put it in another way. But I'm worried with the focus seems to be on big areas. I wonder when do we one is there a possibility to pilot some of these projects in smaller municipalities, in rural areas, so that we have a situation where people are being attended to not only on big areas only, but small places as well. So that comes to my mind as you make your presentation this room. Or do we deal with the small areas as well? Do we pilot from small areas as well? Because your generation of solutions is multifaceted, so how do you apply it going forward? And once the pilot has been done, of course you do get outcomes, but how do you cascade that in such a way that small areas also benefit from the innovation that you've done? Thank you.
Coupled to that, how often do you visit service delivery points? Do you sometimes go on your own, visit hospitals, schools? Except for when you are there to deliver your projects, you know, you just do that.
Thanks, Chair. I don't know if it's because I'm still new, but I don't think Umama Langi's question was answered properly. So just to make it a little bit easier for me to understand it, I think maybe please explain how you provide an innovative solution to a problem. So if there's a, come think of a problem now, like, I don't know, if there's a service delivery problem, what process do you go through to find a solution to that? Like, with the solution you found with the rat infestation, it's clear there that it wasn't properly researched, because if you'd done research, you would have found out that bringing owls into a community is not a good idea because of beliefs and so forth. So please explain to me, here's the problem, what are the processes you go through in order to find an innovative solution, a new solution, a creative solution. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Nan, for that question. Our model is such that when there's a challenge, a service delivery challenge, it's either the department brings it to us or we identify it and we approach them and say, we see that you have this challenge, can we work on it? Then we bring what we call a multi stakeholder team of experts, whether from the NGO or from the academia, but the service delivery department remains critical. The owner, we call them the business owner. We bring them to the party. We bring in, if we foresee that it's going to be an ICT solution, we then bring in CETA as well, so that everything is conducted according to the script. We have to find funding to pilot because of the risk element. You can't use the PSMA money for testing and for piloting because there's a risk element. So we form partnerships with private sectors, companies who want to use their corporate social investment money to assist the public service. So but before we even do that, or together within the team, we then investigate the challenge further to find out if, one, isn't there a solution around the country or elsewhere that's already existing that's addressing a similar challenge, and whether it has worked or not, and so on and so on. So we find out, and then we look for. So we found five solutions to the rat infestation challenge. One of them being the owls, the cages. We found one to the owls, which was there, where in Alex, because they have the biggest problem apparently. They use red cages. They've been using red cages. None of it. We have found five, and we are now investigating because they all seem to be not quite working. We are now working on finding a solution that's going to address it once and for all. But that's how we address solutions. We then investigate, but we start by, to avoid reinventing the wheel, looking to see if anything exists anywhere, and then we bring it, and then we adapt, because, you know, we look at a different context. If it works in one context, it won't necessarily work. So that's why we're taking the lift from a project to the Eastern Cape, rural Eastern Cape, you know, where we had to engage traditional leaders to sell the project to them. And with St. John's is going to be the anchor school and connect to all the others. So we do go. We found there's a sustainable village in the Eastern Cape somewhere, where everything is recycled and life is. We found a couple of those, and we are trying to take them to other villages. So we actually want to throw it to the rural areas. That's where the solutions are being taken. In fact, that's where we find that the best solutions are in the rural, the most destitute areas of South Africa. And, you know, where public servants are really driven to come up with innovations. If you'll allow me, honorable members, I'd like them to come through. Of course, Lindani, I'm sure you want to talk to some of those issues. If you can.
Thanks, you. I think you've covered quite a lot, but I just wanted to add on the fact that one of our challenges is scaling up, because as the ED was saying, we don't deliver these services, and our role basically is to give them the solution that is available. And as we were talking of an example of a queue management, about five solutions we found about queue management. We tested, piloted them with the hospitals, Helen Joseph. We held a workshop with the CEOs, but we still are aware also that there are problems of queue management in hospitals, but the solutions are there and they have been shared with them, but we'll keep on actually doing that, trying to get that. In terms of service delivery points, madam, which you were asking, yes, we do visit them solely on the basis of finding a solution and actually providing a solution, because our mandate is to do, which is to find a solution and provide it for government. And we will visit a service delivery point on that basis, because our the fact that we are small as an organization, and our target staff is more around focusing on the priorities of government. So if other government department has approached us or we found a solution, we will then investigate from that level by visiting a service delivery point to actually see what are the challenges and what possible solutions we can come up with. I think those are the two points just to add on top of what you said.
Through you, Chair, I'd like to just add that we're just in the process of putting together a ministerial forum. There was a suggestion that we put together a ministerial forum for innovation, and which will even address the issue of innovation funding, because what we would like to see happening, a funding model for innovation, is that in the same way that each department is asked to dedicate at least 1% to capacity building, to training, we would like to see that happening as well within departments, that they are asked to dedicate at least 1% or 2% to innovation, so that when we work with them, we end up having to run around and find funding for the pilot, that they will have the, at least some funding that will be dedicated to funding. We actually had Minister Pando yesterday and Minister Kigaba at the conference, and we were exploring a number of solutions, and we're making sure that we work very closely with science and technology, because there's a national system of innovation that's driven by science and technology, and we have a number of things that are planned to make sure that we enhance our... The same with e-government. We rely on e-government to be up and running. There is the e-government branch again in DPSA, and we're having discussions with them and the Department of Telecommunications. We are talking to them to make sure how we can really harness.
Thank you. I will be quick. And just to address the question around the structure and the vacant posts, on the slide there you can see that we've got one post vacant in Corporate Resource Management and two posts in Office of the CFO. Then we've got two posts vacant in Public Service Innovation, one in Research Development and one in Enabling Environment. Both of those posts relates to project management of the projects. And then there's one vacant post there as well. It's currently on the establishment, but it's in the process of being abolished. And those is also contract posts, so the two posts that is vacant. There's in program two, there's another four posts that is on contract from the general donor funded, yes.
Members, do you still have?
Yes.
Okay. Finally, recommendations that were made in terms of how you improve your allocation of resources and prioritization of projects. Maybe before we can deal with BRR, we're going to invite you to come, and then let's then go into details and check how best we can assist you in order to prioritize projects that will improve service delivery. All right. Thank you very much, and thanks for attending. I know that your schedule is very busy. You are hosting a conference. And, all right. You are excused. Thanks.
Thank you very much, honorable members. We promise. Thank you.
Two-minute break while NYTA is setting up. Yeah. Thank you.
If you are ready, I'm ready. Also, over there.
Thank you.
IDA. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning to all Honorable Members. I would just like to start by reflecting on the apology of the Deputy Minister and our Executive Chairperson, which has been communicated to your office. But we will then proceed to present the first quarter report as requested. I will give a brief overview of what we are going to be presenting and take a bit of time to speak to elements of additional funding that we foresee will require in the current financial year in preparations for the BRR process. And I will go into a bit of detail in indicating why this additional funding. And then I will hand over to the CFO, who will then provide the detail in terms of the numbers, both in relation to the expenditure and the achievement of the key performance targets as we had set ourselves for the first quarter. The presentation that the CFO will take us through will provide an indication of how we are linking the programs of the NYDA and the budget allocations allocated to those particular programs to the priorities or the outcomes as communicated by the government medium-term strategic framework. Also, we will provide for a quarterly performance report to date and the expenditure report to date. But what you will also note is that in the presentation, we have also reflected the actual numbers of young people who are benefiting from the variety of our programs and to account for the expenditure that we would have spent for that particular quarter in that particular program. We have also gone a step further of providing statistics per province to indicate how many young people in all nine provinces are benefiting from the NYD products and services in the variety of the program. Also, just to indicate for the benefit of the members of the committee that the detailed list of all these young people, their names, their locations are available. We have not necessarily attached them here because some of them, the list are way too long, but they are readily available for provision to the members of this committee should the committee require them. I will then just briefly speak to the areas of additional funding which the CFO will present here, which I think I should just give context to them so that as and when the CFO presents them, members can have a better understanding of why we're asking for this additional funding. The first area of additional funding will be in relation to the funding of the restructuring program that we have undertaken or as an organization. Committee members would remember that we presented a turnaround strategy for the organization to the committee, and the committee has adopted that turnaround strategy. One of the key issues that was proposed by the turnaround strategy was a restructuring of the organization to address, amongst others, the alignment of the organogram of the organization to the new strategy of the organization and the priorities that have been adopted by the agency in response to the priorities that have been adopted by the national government. Equally, part of the need to restructure was to address the high salary bill, specifically at senior management level. And I will provide a bit of progress to date of where we are. Safe to say that we would not necessarily have at the time of budgeting for the 2015-2016 financial year had known the numbers of employees who would be impacted by this process, because we had to employ the services of PwC to assist us with restructuring and the determination of the number of employees that needs to be laid off or that the organization needs to part ways with in order to restructure, realign, but also to address the high salary bill. Now that the process of the project as conducted by PwC has produced results, we are now in a position to know how many positions are affected, and we are able now to cost it, and this is an area where we would require an additional assistance from National Treasury. We have started to engage with National Treasury, but we thought that it's important to bring this here as the portfolio committee that is responsible for the work that we do so that we can also solicit your support in this regard. Just a brief progress update on where we are in this particular program. We have a microstructure that the board has already approved, and we have started implementing this. We have a honorable chair already reduced the executive managers of the National Youth Development Agency. The restructuring led us to a downsizing from 9 divisions to only 5 divisions. To this end, we have already made appointments of the 5 executive directors, and the 4 executive directors who are leaving will be leaving at the end of this particular month in question. I must say, Chair, as I take this opportunity to boast, seeing that it's Women's Month, that in our appointment, in the 5 executive positions, we have appointed 4 women and only 1 male candidate, and not from a token point of view, but because these women were quite capable of the task at hand of advancing youth development in our country. No, she's not here. They are not here. We'll introduce them in the next sitting, Chair. Yes. Executive directors. Yeah. So the only males in the executive is myself and the CFO. Yes, the one was with us in my respect. So that is the progress that we have made. By the end of this week, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members would have also fully implemented the level of senior managers. There we are reducing from 38 senior managers positions to 7 senior managers. And by this Friday, we would have made that appointment and we would have made that particular reduction. And the process will continue to unfold, and we see the process being fully finalized by the end of September. So this is an area where the CFO will speak to the numbers in terms of the engagement that we're having with National Treasury in relation to the assistance that we need from them. Then, Honorable Chair, we are again speaking about some of the program areas that we would have presented to the Portfolio Committee previously when we put forward a case for additional funding of $200 million, and will further justify why we think this is important. The one area is the Second Chance Matricular Program. This, again, is also a realization of the successes that we are making as the NYGA with this particular program, also noting that we know that every year about 200,000 young people are failing matric, and they need to be given an opportunity to rewrite and obtain the matric qualification. Also, once again, we are putting forward our Youth Build program, and the important thing here is that the Youth Build program is providing us with an opportunity to provide skills specifically to young people who would have dropped out of the schooling system at some point in their life. Once again, statistics tell us that about 1.2 million young people or children register in grade 1, but at the time that they are supposed to be sitting for their grade 12 examination, only about 500,000 are sitting to write matric or grade 12 examination, which by implications means every year we are losing close to 700,000 young people from the schooling system. So this program of Youth Build provides us the opportunity to give these young people something to offer to the economy, because they don't have an education to give to potential employers. They don't have any expertise which they can even use to pursue entrepreneurship. So the Youth Build program provides us with the opportunity to do that. The other important thing that we would want to highlight to the committee is that the Youth Build program, we deliver it in partnership with municipalities. There are municipalities that have expressed willingness to work with us. The only thing that is standing between us and working with these municipalities and capacitating these young people with much needed skills is the fact that we don't have our own contribution to put to the table. The CFO will reflect on some of the municipalities that have already committed to work with us in this particular regard.
So the presentation. Are we going to be taking through the presentation, or are you doing that right now? Overview. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm targeting key areas so that by the time we get the numbers, you have the context. Thank you, Chair. Through you. And then one of the programs, again, that we are resubmitting for purpose of BRR review is the grant funding program. I must indicate here that we have conducted a monitoring and evaluation and a research of some sort for all the young people that we have funded in the last 2 years of existence of this particular program to see the successes. And we are happy to pronounce, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that with the average of only about 34% of all businesses, new businesses being registered with CIPC, being able to live and sustain themselves beyond 12 months, this NYDA program is performing at a level of 54%, which is at least 20% above the national average. And it being a new program, we're quite excited about this progress, and you know, we're working harder to even strengthen the program to make sure that we further increase the success rate of this particular program. And given the number of applications that we're getting from young people from all nine provinces, we are interested in participating in the mainstream economy of our country through entrepreneurship. We think that this is a critical program. We must afford these young people an opportunity, and this is the reason why we're bringing it back. The one area, again, where we are seeking to persuade this committee to support us in asking for additional funding with the National Treasury through the BRR process is voter education campaign. South Africa has become younger. And once we know that the IEC will be doing work in making sure that as we move towards the local government election, young people and the general population move and go and register, take interest in participating in the voting process and democratic processes. We think that as the agency that is tasked by this democratic government with the responsibility of youth development, we must also be seen to be at the center and at the forefront of ensuring that young people take interest in democratic processes and they actually go out there and register and vote and take ownership and define the destiny and the future of their country. So we would want to also persuade this committee to get some support in that particular regard. Then the last area is the area of additional offices that we would like to open. In this regard, we must indicate that our approach is an engagement with a variety of municipalities and present to them an opportunity to partner with them where we ask them to provide office space for free, and then we bring the personnel, the assets that are required to deliver, and then we provide the product and service offerings of the NYDA. To this end, much progress has been made in particular two areas where agreements have been reached. One is the Bembe District Municipality and specifically the Tulamela Local Municipality, who have committed to provide an office space for the NYDA, as well as the Richards Bay Municipality, which has also committed to provide a rent-free office space, as we want to pursue the process of taking the products and services and the agency to where young people are. We would like support in ensuring that once these offices are open, we actually have the money to provide products and services to the respective, to the young people in those two respective areas. And we continue to engage on this particular project. And then the last thing that I would just want to reflect on before I hand over to the CFO to give the detailed presentation is just keep policy development in the space of NYDA and youth development, and note that the National Youth Policy has now been launched by the Minister after it was approved by Cabinet, and as the NYDA, when we will be going through our planning process for the 2016-2017 financial year, we will be guided by that National Youth Policy, as well as to reflect that the process of development of the Integrated Youth Development Strategy, which will equally be informed by the National Youth Policy, is currently underway, and the process of the review of the NYDA Act is currently underway as championed and led by the Executive Authority through the Office of the Deputy Minister. And as well as our Youth Employment Plan 2030 is currently on course, and we are intending to have the full plan adopted and by the board of the NYDA and shared with Cabinet and the rest of South Africa before the 31st of March. With those chair, I would want to hand over to the CFO to deal with the detailed numbers. Thank you very much.
Thank you, CEO. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, the CEO is reflected on the agenda that will follow for today, so we can get straight into it. In terms of our budget allocation for the NYDA, we have a budget allocation of about 431 million rand. this is split between mainly four key programmatic areas. Sorry, there was a small error in the presentation we circulated. The four programmatic areas are economic participation, education and skills development, national youth service, and research and policy. We also have, through our, NYDA is established through the NYDA Act. We do not have provincial departments to deliver services. Therefore, we require to establish a service delivery channel through our branch system in order to deliver services to young people. So the four programmatic areas and the service delivery channel make up the bulk of our budget. We then have an administration budget, which is about 87 million rand, which is, funds the operational cost of the organization. And our employee cost, which we'll speak to progressively later, is about 189 million. On that slide, we've tried to link all of our key programmatic areas to the medium-term strategic framework, which is ultimately linked to the National Development Plan 2030. If we look at our performance in terms of financial performance in terms of the first quarter of the financial year, in the area of economic participation, we've spent about 47% of our quarter one budget. This difference is mainly related to the timing difference when grants are approved at our, through our service delivery and when they are actually disbursed. We had also planned for our mentorship program to be implemented during the first quarter of the financial year. It will only most likely be implemented during the second quarter of the financial year. In terms of education and skills development, we spent 85% of our budget, which is very close to our expectation of what we wanted to spend. In terms of national youth service, we had planned to spend, we've only spent 34%. In terms of national youth service, just to give you an idea of how the program would work, is that in terms of young people entering volunteer programs or entering youthful programs, we want to create meaningful exit opportunities for them. So you don't want just a young person who volunteers on a three-month project and goes back to being unemployed afterwards. In this case here, we're slightly behind budget. So we work very closely with the Department of Public Works on the expanded Public Works program. The prior Public Works program ran over into April and May of this financial year, which means the recruitment of the ETWP project for the next financial year will start in June, and we'll see many of these costs come through during the second quarter of the financial period. In our service delivery channel, we've spent the majority of our budget, 88% there. In terms of research and policy work, we've overspent on our budget there for the first quarter, but still within our annual budget. We find that it's very beneficial to talk to young people through our youth dialogue sessions to understand their needs. And there's also been extensive consultations through the National Youth Policy, which will ultimately influence the Youth Employment Plan and the Integrated Youth Development Strategy. In terms of administration, we've spent 61% of our budget. There's two main areas for the understanding there, is that our audit fees we would have expected to come through in our first quarter of the financial year. They'll only most likely come through during the second quarter. Also, with this restructuring process that we're currently undergoing, we've passed some projects in administration into the next quarter of the financial year. Just also in terms of administration, having a saving on administration and redirecting that towards projects, which we generally do after the second quarter, is not a bad thing. It means we can redirect funds into more programs which ultimately benefit young people. In terms of our employee costs, we're very close to our budget for the financial year, 102%. If we look at the overall picture, we've spent 80% of our budget at the end of the first quarter. Our projections there, we expect to spend have enough budget to expend on the first six areas. The employee cost is where we have the real challenge. We budgeted 189 million rand. With the retrenchments that are required to happen, we will most likely spend 206 million rand. I will speak to our shortfalls now. Just to give you a picture of the salary costs of the NYDA over the period that we're looking at, we're currently in a restructuring process where the CEO would have spoken to the fact that we've reduced our executive management now from 9 to 5. We're reducing our senior management from 31 positions to 7 positions. And we're reducing our management structure from 68 manager positions to 37 manager positions. Therefore, the NYDA at this point in time has no vacancies. We are currently in the process of reducing staff through a Section 189 process. So if you look at that table there, it'll take you through the fact that salary cost has ballooned from 36% in 2010-2011 to 46% in 2015-16. This is mostly as a result of less than inflationary adjustments on the annual allocation from National Treasury. which has resulted in this increase in the salary cost. So the restructuring process was critical for the organization to bring its salary budget back within the confines of what National Treasury allows for. If we look at employee costs going forward now, in 15-16, with the retrenchment packages that we have to pay out, our employee costs will form 206 million rand of our 409 million rand allocation, which is about 50% of the allocation. So this is assuming that National Treasury does not assist us with funding any portion of our retrenchment packages. But this slide is powerful in terms of what it tells you about the future. If you look at future financial years, you're only going to be spending 35% of your annual allocation on salaries, which is well within National Treasury's framework for what you should be spending on salary costs. But it's even more strong in terms of what it demonstrates. Even in a period of austerity and budget cuts, where your allocation is being reduced from 409 million to 405 million, you're still fundamentally reducing your salary costs by 11% of the top line. So that is, we're really taking strong steps to ensure our salary budget is brought within the allocation. Even in future years, you'll see the increase year on year is only 9 million rand from 16-17 to 17-18, which means that any increase in your allocation is mostly going towards youth development and not towards employee costs. If we look at why we expect our salary costs to balloon, if we have our revised FYD structure, and we plan to have our macro structure in place by latest the 30th of September, and our micro structure by the end of March 2016, our salary budget will only be 171 million for the financial year. But in terms of Section 189, we are required to allow employees to voluntarily exit the organization, and we are required to pay retrenchment packages to some employees. We are remaining within the confines of the law in terms of how we pay retrenchment packages. These will amount to approximately 35 million rand, which will push our salary costs up to 206.7 million rand. In our salary budget, we had 189 million rand. If it balloons to 206 million rand, we are short on about 16.9 million rand. We can find internal savings through reduced employees. Our utilities will decrease, our travel and accommodation will decrease, stationary, ICT, fixed assets. So we can potentially find 3 million rand internally that we can reprioritize to assist us in funding this. But we have presented a strong proposal to National Treasury to assist us in three scenarios, either to assist us with funding the full package or partially funding the package through paying what our shortfall is. These engagements are ongoing. National Treasury has indicated a strong willingness to assist us, as they've been one of the key drivers in us having to restructure the organization post the merger of Umsumbumpo and UIF. That is basically our request on the administrative portion and the employee costs portion. The CEO would have spoken about the fact that NYDA plays in a space where we are required to almost respond to every challenge of young people in the economy. And South Africa is a youthful population. Young people make up the majority of our population. Therefore, once you break down 400 million rand, and it seems like a lot, once you break it down, there's not that much available across many products and services. To increase impact, it would assist us for specific high-impact programs if we could obtain additional funding to reach higher amounts of young people. I'll take you through just shortly what are some of the programs we believe will be assisted through greater amounts of funding. If you look at your second chance matric rewrite, where we currently cater for about 3,600 matriculants in this program. That is the costing model per province in terms of travel, printing, additional contributions that we bring on board, which ultimately brings you to a cost of about 3,600 rand per young person to take them through a second chance matric rewrite program. And this program shows strong statistics where students achieve distinctions in math and physical sciences after having gone through the program. And also, we know the benefit that matric has on promoting employment for young people in our country. If we were, for example, to take this project and increase the numbers from about 3,600 to about 24,000 young people, using a similar costing model, you need to invest about 93 million rand in a program such as this. That is at a cost of 3,800 rand per young person. I've spoken about some of the benefits of second chance matric rewrite. Our funding model also has a bias towards provinces that have lower matric pass rates. We work with the Department of Basic Education and national and provincial departments where integration back into school for matrics who have failed is lacking. We also work with provinces which have critical skills shortages, provinces which have high students to school ratios, and provinces which have the lowest income categories. Another program potentially that can have high impact where we also find lots of collaboration across government is a youth build project. Youth build is a combination of skills development and national youth service, and I put again there the funding model for you. It costs us about 2.6 million rand to benefit about 200 young people. So you're looking at a cost of about 10 to 12,000 rand per young person on a one-year program. Compare that to putting a student through a three-year tertiary course, where you're likely to spend 70 or 80,000 over 3 years and no guarantee of employment after that tertiary course. Many of our youthful projects guarantee either entrepreneurship or employment post the program. In terms of our proposal, we can work with 5 more municipalities during the financial year. We have memorandums of understanding. We have consultations with municipalities. And we also would like to implement a youthful school. So youthful currently in its only model focuses mainly on construction to link to the infrastructure development program of the country. But we can look at focusing on other artisan skills where South Africa is severely lacking in terms of plumbing, electricity, and that sort of thing. So the ability to reach about 1,000 more young people will cost us about 20.5 million rand. And we work with municipalities, they assist us with co-funding these proposals. Just to speak to, again, some of the benefits of a youth build program, the sites that we develop are done in consultation with Human Settlement and the Department of Public Works in terms of the Expanded Public Works program. It's always linked to the National Development Plan, whereby we want to place young future artisans at the epicenter of infrastructure growth in the country. It's areas where there's critical need for RVC housing needs, areas where there's critical skill shortages and low levels of entrepreneurship activity, provinces which have been earmarked in the IDP, areas with skill shortages in terms of artisan skills such as plumbing and electricity is also lacking. And the youthful school is following the model of an American institution which we've also partnered with, and as I said, we're focused on very new artisan skills. If you look at the grant program, which is also a very successful program of the organization, last year we had 3,000 applications from young people to become entrepreneurs. On top of that, we had 17,000 young people who were interested in attending training that could further their careers in becoming entrepreneurs. With the ability to create 900 or almost 1,000 new businesses at an average cost of about 37,500 rand per new business, we would need an investment of about 37.3 million rand. Again, consider the benefit. Out of those 1,000 new businesses, you have the potential of creating at least 3 new jobs per business, so you're creating 3,000 to 5,000 new jobs in that space. In terms of how we develop our framework for our grant funding and our link to provinces, we try and link it to provinces where entrepreneurship level is currently low, provinces which have been earmarked for exponential growth in the future, areas and provinces where market shares exist for new goods and services, where there's potential for manufacturing output, and where current business activities are low. The CEO would have attested to voter education. We are approaching an election year, and it's very critical for us to get young people interested in voting in our country. I think the statistics from the previous elections would have said that 1 in 4 young people did not vote in the prior election. I think it's important to emphasize that South African politics is most likely its most vibrant, energetic phase. If you don't mind me saying it, because honorable members like you are across the table. So it's important that we get the... So politics is vibrant and it's energetic in our country, and there's an ability to get young people, but we must get them on the bus now. So we must get them interested in politics, get them interested in voting, and get them to the polls in the next election. We've costed that we need to work with the IEC about 18.2 million rand to roll out the voter education program. And then the CEO has also spoken to us establishing new offices, especially in rural areas, to expand our rural reach. In that case, they would need a new branch to establish costs you an average about 2.3 million rand a year. Establishing a local youth office costs you, because it's done in collaboration with the municipality, costs you about 100,000 rand a year. In total, Chair, and I must emphasize, this funding request is not for us to meet current ATP. It's for us to scale up and reach more young people, change more young people's lives in the country. We need a combined funding request of about 174 million rand. The focus from the committee has always been in the past that NYDA must go back and find its own savings before asking for additional funds. And to this end, we've done as much as possible from our side to reprioritize where we can. We've improved the governance of the organization. We've implemented cost-cutting measures to see where we can save and move from administrative costs into program-related costs. We've shown you the savings on the salary budget. We're going to take all of those salary budget costs and redirect them into youth development programs. So just to give you an idea of how we will reprioritize in future financial years, in 2016-17, when we start to save about 45 million rand on employee costs, some of that is eaten up by the fact that National Treasury has imposed the majority of its austerity during 16-17, but we still have 29.7 available for reprioritization. We will put that into National Youth Service and Economic Participation Programs. In 17-18 and 18-19, we'll have 48 million rand and 50 million rand available for reprioritization into these programs as well. But again, we need to look at impact. Is that this money, although going to young people, we do need more to reach all vulnerable young people in our society. Chairperson, just to take you through quarter one performance, our performance against our planned targets, I won't spend too much time on this here. In the area of economic participation, our target for new businesses established was 143. We're very close to achieving our target. There's 124 enterprises that have been established. As I did mention, there is a timing difference between when the grants are approved and when they are actually disbursed. In terms of assisting young entrepreneurs with business development services, during the first quarter we've assisted about 4,700 new entrepreneurs. We've also got currently 15,000 registered in our SmartBox program, which will also be added to our figure during the second quarter. In terms of communities assisted with community development facilitation programs to make them inclusive in the economy, we've assisted 10 new communities there. We've created 554 new jobs during the first quarter of our financial year. Just to give you some of the statistics there, in terms of the provincial breakdown of our grant program during the first quarter. If you look at the number of young people assisted through BDS, also there we've given you the different types of initiatives that we have for business development services. We offer entrepreneurship development training to try to get young people understanding of a business, to pre-mentor them in being involved in a business. We establish market linkages where we link products and services together with one another to enhance the impact of entrepreneurs. We provide BEE training and certifications. We have rural development and governance trainings. We assist new businesses with their CIPC registration, and we have a voucher program that provides different services from branding and marketing to accounting services, business plan services, and that is the breakdown that we've done of the number of young people assisted through each of those programs and also across each of the provinces in the country. We've also done a breakdown for you of our budget, our business development program, and the amount that we've spent against that budget. If you look at the number of jobs created, also to give you an understanding of which programs are creating jobs, the market linkages program, the vouchers program, and the grant program together help us create these 550 new jobs that we've reported. We've also, again, done a breakdown for you per province in the country. If you look at education, the Second Chance Matric Rewrite and the Solomon Mashangu Scholarship Fund are programs that we only implement during the fourth quarter of the financial year. But during the first quarter, we have helped 280,000 young people through career guidance sessions to point them in the right direction for their careers going forward. Our career guidance is linked to National Skills Fund Critical Skills Program in the country to aim to place young people in the great careers when they register at tertiary institutions. We've also, again, provided you with statistics of provincial will catch it up during the second quarter of the financial year. We've also registered over 3,000 young people in volunteer programs, and we've assisted about 3,000 young people through job preparedness, job placement, and job preparedness, job placement, and life skills programs. We've again given you statistics per branch for life skills, job preparedness, and job placement. Again, the statistics for volunteer programs across the country, where we've registered and in which areas young people are participating in volunteer programs of the NYTA. Second and third quarter. If you look at health and well-being, we've assisted during the first quarter 1,327 young people through accessing programs and interventions designed to improve health and well-being. We've also assisted over 44,000 young people to participate in campaigns and special projects which we've implemented for health and well-being. We've also given you the breakdown financially in terms of what our actual and our budget was for the first quarter in terms of program area, further broken down in terms of education, skills development, and health and well-being. In terms of research and policy, it's important that we do research and policy work. So we've published 8 youth development research and evaluation projects. This helps us to take lessons learned from programs that we've implemented and to understand where challenges still lie and how we can better deliver services going forward. We're also very busy with the development of the National Youth Employment Plan 2030, which we plan to publish during the fourth quarter of the financial year. Currently, LAF is in its lobby and advocacy stage with private sector, public sector, and civil society. In terms of number of organs of state lobbied and advocated to assist with youth development, we've lobbied 5, and we have about 6 in the pipeline, which I've listed here. I won't go through the detail. We've also assisted 3,700 young people in participating through youth dialogue sessions with the NYDA. We've raised 21.9 million rand in funds for youth development. In our service delivery channel, the number of young people that we've assisted through information provision and on giving access to all government programs and services aimed at youth development, we've assisted almost 600,000 young people in that space there. That's mainly due to the fact that in Youth Month, June, we have extensive rollout of our products across all provinces. We've also given you here the cost it takes us to run each branch all over the cost of the first quarter of the financial year. The CEO has addressed the key policy developments, mainly the National Youth Policy, National Youth Employment Plan, Integrated Youth Development Strategy, and the NYDA. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Chair, just in closing, just to reflect that as we make this request for additional funding, we believe as the NYDA that we have made a case in that we are running a green governance for the 2014-2015 financial year, a report that we are still to table and will present in detail to this committee. The Auditor General has for the first time given us a clean audit. And over and above that, the agency has, for the first time, or rather, has achieved its highest performance since it was established. So we are running clean governance. We are taking youth development to young people of this country who desperately need it. All we are requesting for is support from this committee so that we can reach even more young people in a meaningful way. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Kabtu, for the presentation. I think there's light at the end of the tunnel. And congratulations for your clean audit report. We're waiting with anticipation to be presented before us. No findings, nothing, just clean. Clean.
It's both unqualified and clean. For the past 5 years, we have received unqualified.
Okay. No. No, at least I must say it has been It has been a long year for us with the NYDA, but it was worth spending time with the NYDA. You are getting somewhere. You are on the right track. I want to make few comments. The first issue is in relation to what both of you have said because of the elections. I want you to completely never say that again in your presentation. You don't exist on the basis of elections. That should always be in the back of your mind. Even when you try and negotiate for funding, never use that as a point for argument or for more funding. But you exist because there's great benefit in investing in youth or in young people. Ne? You must always understand that. So I forgive you for having said that because of elections next year. So that case is closed. You don't exist on those bases. Now, you got a clean audit. You are now restructuring. We are happy about that because those are, especially your top heavy structure, was one of our most worrying issues. But because of history as well. When you plan, now I'm still not happy. I still feel that you don't reach young people. Young people still don't know about NYDA. Look, there are 278 municipalities, 8 metropolitan councils, 44 districts, 226 local councils, and then over and above that, that says 42% of our population is young people. Yeah? One way or the other, young people must benefit from the NYDA. Whether they've gone to universities, after that they need skills, NYDA must capacitate them. After that they need jobs, NYDA must capacitate them. Those who did not make it for matric, NYDA must also capacitate them through your Solomon Mahlangu scholarship. So one way or the other, young people must, pass through the NYDA offices. The reason why I spoke about, I broke down municipalities, it is because of your offices. I don't know which slide it is. 21? Your branches. How many branches are there? It's slide 22. Your branches, there's somewhere where you have Soweto. You broke down, you gave us a breakdown of branches. Don't you? No, but there's somewhere where you. 14. Yeah. 40. No, it was long before the man. Oh yeah, 40. Next, you have how many branches? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 18, 14. Yeah, I don't know where you get the 18 from. So from now on, going forward, you see, in your next financial year, or let me say 2 years from now, if you are able to say, out of 278 municipalities, we are established in so many municipalities or districts, then I will then have a sense of NYDA, it is alive, it is felt amongst young people. So as you plan from now onwards, plan towards that. Even the resources that you are mobilizing for, it means you are now going to address the needs only on this existing, ne? on these existing branches. What about, you know, other areas that are not even mentioned here, other provinces that are not even reflecting here? So it's a worrying factor to me. But otherwise, I'm happy about your presentation. You have recovered. You are confident. Even when you speak, we are able to follow. We are happy compared to the last year, you know, our first meeting with yourself. Yeah. So try to spread your wings. Plan. Don't plan like a person, a ward councillor. You know, plan like a national... Yeah, national agency. Now you are planning like, you know, I don't even want to get to politics of how, what informed the establishment of these offices. It would look like because Madamini was influential somewhere, so and so and so. To me, it will appear like that. You understand? So my only one now is about you penetrating, going down to where you are mostly needed as we go forward. Well, that might not be realized by yourself, but that should be the legacy that you must be able to, the standard that you must be able to set for others who will take over from you. Members? Oh. Dr. Mwabe, you are also welcome. Sure.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to the committee and the leadership of the NYDA. Firstly, Chair, I'm tempted to draft a motion without notice for today's sitting based on the clean audit of the NYDA. But I'm scared because there is one party that would reject it anyway. But nevertheless, I want to applaud the good work that the CEO and his team have done. It's my first time ever to hear that this structure has received a clean audit. Even the level of their presentation, you see, when you compare, as the chairperson have said, when you compare presentations of early last year and what is happening now, it's an improvement. But I have got one concern, Chair. CEO, I still believe that this rewrite program is not your baby business. You spend more money than there are two departments dealing with education in this country. There's basic education, there's high education. We also have BAs and FETs. Now, for such an important structure like this one, that must specifically look at the development of young people in terms of businesses. But now go back to the issues of education. I still strongly believe that you should scrap that program and you will save more. But this rewrite program. The rewrite metric, yeah, I still believe. But on that, CFO, I want to know about some traveling flights under that rewrite program. Traveling, accommodation, car hiring, I don't know what's happening there. You see someone rewrite the exam, he just goes to the center, I don't know who's traveling and booking accommodation. I just need a clarity on that one. Otherwise, I'm impressed with everything, especially your restructuring as well. You know, I'm shocked that you've got 67 managers. I don't know what you're doing. And senior managers and junior managers. But I'm happy that you are handling that very well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to continue where my colleague has said, I'm also critical of the fact that we are duplicating services in this country. And I believe that whereas the Matric Rewrite Program is a wonderful program in itself, the fact that it should actually be the primary responsibility of the Department of Basic Education, and especially the provincial education departments, is a matter of concern, and we should try in government to try to eliminate this kind of duplication. Same with the bursary funds, because each bursary fund requires a bureaucracy of people that will also accept applications and so on, and we are forcing young people to apply for bursaries at various institutions, with the NYDA, with the NSFAS fund, etc. If you are poor, just preparing an application is quite a task and often even expensive. And I would really like us to rather see those funds and also the education initiatives working together. My main question has to do with the restructuring of the NYDA. In terms of your document, you say that the 9 senior executives have already been reduced to only 5 at the end of July. By the way, I see all 9 still appear on your website. My question is just how much have you already paid then in this quarter until end July? Is it actually the beginning of the second quarter in July in terms of severance packages? My second question for these 4 people, I don't need to have individual figures, but just if you can give me the bulk of the figure for the 4. The second one is, were they on fixed term contracts? Because I do see that, for example, you're currently advertising for branch managers and so on, and they are only appointed for 5-year terms. Then also, do you see yourself as part of the public service? Are your salaries and benefits in any case linked to the public service? And then just lastly, do you have any continued obligation against these people that you are retrenching in terms of an agreement to continue to contribute to medical aid and such contributions? Thank you so much.
Before you come in fact, your structuring program, and I learned about it on the newspapers. It was never presented to us. Do you know about it, members? The restructuring program. The NYDA restructuring program. At some point they must. Or they didn't. I know that they said they were on a process, but not learned in the media that you started with restructuring and that there were labor disputes and what was. But at some point, please find time to come and present to us. We want to be informed on that so that we are able to.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me upfront say congratulations. Well done on your clean audit. A clean audit is not child's play. It takes a lot to get a clean audit. So big congratulations to you and the team for that. I've got a couple of comments and questions. I saw in the ATC today that there's been nominations have opened for new board members. So I'm assuming that's a process that will take place in this committee. Because they've asked the Parliament to give names of 7.
Hopefully the Speaker will have to refer the matter to the school committee.
Yeah.
It hasn't been referred to us, no?
No. Okay. Now, your restructuring process. So if I understand it correctly, the main reason you're asking more money is for retrenchment packages as part of your restructuring process, am I right? I mean, we are how many months into the new financial year? When you did your budgeting at the beginning of the year, why didn't you factor in the fact that you're going to be doing restructuring? Why is it a couple of months into the financial year now you're coming to Parliament asking for more money? Why didn't you plan for it right at the beginning of the financial year? It's poor planning on your side that a couple of months in, you're back to Parliament, cap in hand, when you could have planned for it right at the beginning. And then I also want to know the retrenchment packages. How much is it per staff member? Is it just retrenchment packages? Is there also what they call golden handshakes? How much are they per staff member? And then the voter education campaign, I don't know, it's just a little bit uncomfortable with us. I mean, it's good that we run voter education campaigns You know, young people need to understand the importance of voting, but you know, neither has in the past been, you know, tainted for specific political affiliations. And you yourself said you exist because of elections. So I'm hoping your voter education campaign has absolutely zero political tainting. It's purely objective, with the purpose of encouraging young people to vote with no vote for this party, or no yellow t-shirts, no branding, no blue, no orange, nothing. It's completely objective, and no one can no one can make insinuations that it's promoting a specific party. Actually, I'd like to see some of that material for myself, just to be comfortable that you guys are not. I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying, you know, all red or whatever color it is. Okay. I'm a little bit disappointed that the chairperson's not here, because I read an interesting letter he'd written in the Cape Times last week, where he spoke out in favor of military conscription, in favor of young people after matric being forced into the military, which is very, very concerning for me. I don't think young people should be forced into the army. There's nothing wrong if it's voluntary, it's suggested, but forcing people into the army is completely mad in my mind. Thanks, that's it for now.
Chairperson, it's quite refreshing to realize that the NYDA is being moved from that organization, which was hemorrhaging a few months ago, to where it is today. It demonstrates an effort on their part to not only the commitment that they have shown us or promised us, but things are happening, and that is quite refreshing. I don't have a question per se, but I only have an advice to say. One would really love to see a very strong relation between the NYDA and the municipalities as an imperative. There shouldn't be any choice about it, but it has to be imperative, because that is where the problems of the country are being felt, at the level of the municipalities. So it becomes imperative that the relation becomes very, very strong, so that problems can be addressed from that level. Thank you very much, sir. That's all I want to say.
Ngiyabonga, Chairperson. Maybe I also need to follow the other honourable members for really congratulating the NYDA for their audit outcome, and say it has been a long journey, and thank you to allow yourself to be led by us. We know that it was not an easy way. Sometimes we fight and get very angry to one another, but now the results are just written on the wall. So thank you very much, Honourable Chair, for seeing on that note. There are a few issues maybe that I need to clarify. I'm not trying to answer for the NYDA, but I am saying, as honourable members, sometimes we need to understand the environment that we are in, understand the policies that are applicable to whatever sector that we are doing an oversight. Because if you talk about the NYDA utilizing the money from NSFAS or utilizing the money from the higher education, then we are interfering with the policy. There's a policy in this country which says that people that have failed matric, they cannot go back to school and rewrite. So they are out of those benefits. And it was for this reason that then the NYDA took initiative that because of that policy, which then, if the honourable members, they see that maybe the policy has got a problem, then it becomes our challenge to say, what do we do with that policy? But we need to communicate it with the higher education, because it's the policy that is there, and it was made by the honourable members that people that have failed the matric, either you stay at home or you do whatever. So then the MIDAC then is, and we agreed on that, that yes, do it, because there are people who fail not because they are incapable of passing, but because there was no teacher. There are so many conditions that are challenging our education in our country. So I just want to clarify that to the honourable members that we need to align ourselves with some policies that we ourselves we table. And also maybe secondly to say, the money that was allocated to the NYDA, we fought for it. Honourable, they said they know very well that that 409, it was so difficult. The DA was killing us. But I respect what Honourable Kato then said, that because maybe they are where they are because of that fight. So it was not going to be easy for them to ask more than that, because even the 409 they could not get it because of the Auditor General's report. So for me, I am saying, here is the child that has tried through thick and thin to be on the milestone. Remember, the new board, and then they took over from this mess. But with our assistant, as the committee, we assisted them to be where they are. And we are able to say, indeed, because I was looking at your youth building model. And me as a mother, I always say to my kids must not define themselves as historically disadvantaged, because most of them, they are not here, they are in UK. So they are advantaged. Forget about the color, but they got what they were supposed to get. So if we are saying here as this committee, we need to invest to our youth. And we are looking at how much job, Chairperson, that the NYDA has so far established and tried to assist with the entrepreneur, I don't know where it's gone to, of about 500 and something. And we are saying, if you want to build your nation, you need to invest in the youth. Then indeed, the money that they have is nothing. They've got only 14 branches, and in those branches they need to employ the people. And so at the end of the day, if we don't do that, if we don't apply our minds as the committee, now, because it's us who sits there, who goes and tell our no, I don't want to say that. In fact, because I don't belong to a political party, I belong to an organization. It also goes back and inform our political parties and the organization that, look, indeed they are to get it. We go to the trend and say, they are supposed to get it because of reason 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And we have seen through our own eyes that from where they are to where they are today, if really we can say the 174 million that they are requesting, should our fiscus get resuscitated and get stronger, can they get something? It might not be 174 million, but can they get something? So that at the end of the day, you look at that program. That program has got nothing to do with what political party. You look at it. Look at Western Cape. Western Cape is sitting at the same par as KwaZulu-Natal. That's what I'm saying. So which means their focus is about the youth. It's about the development of the youth. So I am saying, Honourable Chairperson, I'm trying to persuade the thinking here. I'm trying to persuade, so the NYDA needs not to comment on what I'm saying. It's just to say, we need to have a bigger picture of the country. I'm 61, maybe I'm just with 4 years, who knows, but I would love to see my kids to be given a channel of developing, and that can only be done through making sure that we, us here, we create an environment where the youth, irrespective of the color and the creed, they get well developed. Irrespective of where they stay, they get developed. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair, and also thank you, NYDA family, for the, at least, not at least, a very refreshing, actually every day as you come, I get that sense. Having said that, Chair, Honorable Chair, having said that, picking up from my colleagues, is to say in terms of your project areas or your area of mandate, so to say, can you make sure that it's informed by population and the high rate of unemployment and the metric for rewrite potential individuals, also in terms of areas of scarce skills, so to say. I'm not saying you must respond to it. If you can get that breakdown, I know in the last time you did give us in terms of areas and also exactly in terms of the beneficiaries, as it may. So one would like to have that, so that also when we engage with you, because most likely, Honorable Chair, what happens in even any other committees, it's human nature in terms of officials. They will try to please members present, part of the committee, whereas not all of us in terms of members of parliament can sit in all committees. So there must be that level of equity and balance, striking a balance, which will assist in terms of prioritizing resources according to what I've just said. The other one that I would like to know is how often, you don't need to respond, how often do you, the board, you revise your policies to be in line with the ever-changing laws and policies and that and so forth? Because it will address other issues that we observed during oversight, which we did raise it to you, Chair, to the CEO and the chairperson of the board, so that when you come back, you are able to talk to those issues. Because even your policy in terms of HR, other members have asked, the policy must talk to that also. Issues of employment and also the terms in terms of 5 years and permanent, because it will also help you when you are dealing with your restructuring in terms of human resource, to also to be able, what honorable members have raised in terms of the budget areas. Because it will be costly for the first year, but as we move down to also to satisfy our needs that we have raised in terms of scaling down your highly populated top management structure. The other one that one, when you come back, when you're going to give us, as the chairperson has requested, your comprehensive turnaround strategy, it should say in terms of the unintended consequences of the lower levels, the information that I have is that there are also not quite an alarming outflow of personnel, which is unintended consequences. If you can get that to say, in Mpumalanga, in terms of the regional office, there's so much stuff in terms of this one, then in terms of percentage, so that they just summarize percentage of that high-level information, will really appreciate that, because it will talk to you, talk to the issues, how do you control this year, this financial year. How are we going to meet your predetermined objectives, because it does have an impact. Even the issue of also your presence in terms of rural areas and so forth, it talks to those things. And I'm sure when you come back, with the areas that gave us like an aftertaste in terms of the voter education, that you'll come back to say which areas, if I say areas, I mean in terms of target class, if I may use, looking for a better word, of young people that you target, whether it's going to be in the schools, in terms of those ones who are ready to vote, and how do you intend to unfold that project? Whether you're going to couple also with ID applications and all that. Okay, let's see. You know, Chair, it's a pity that the CEO of the of the CPSI? Because there's something that we can learn at MDG through you, Chair, DME at MDG. What makes these young people to be where they are today? Notwithstanding the roller coaster that we have last year, we understood that one. What makes the elder ones who are running the departments now and the entities and the SOEs not to do what exactly they are doing? So there is something, the issue of experience, that I know it better because I've been here in this system for 18 years and all that. So that's I think there's something that they need to say when the senior management, whether it's the DG forums, whatever it is, that they need to talk to you to say how do they manage to do that. Then they were learning from each other, regardless whether we are young or old. And I'm happy that you are here at MDG because you take up some of these issues that we are raising. But the other thing, when you also show off in terms of using, lacking for a better weight, when you're boasting, you know, about the new recruits, you must talk to the issues of disability. I know in terms of gender, in terms of women in particular, you are there, but also in terms of representativity, in terms of the geographical spread, as it may, in terms of provinces, the provinces that other population, like this morning, by the way, Chair, was it? Yeah, not this morning, early morning, Radio SFM, they were talking about transformation and all those things. You know, there's a person that called, although he was a little bit, I hope it was he, a little bit emotional, but that's why I'm raising the issue of the race, demographics and all that. To say sometimes when we think of transformation in terms of human resources, we think about black and white and there. There are, provinces are not equally represented in terms of the demographics. Also the other one, Chair, while you are doing so far so good, you haven't come back to us, probably somewhere where, probably through the ATVG or the Deputy Minister, but at the portfolio level, the international agreements that you sign and you go outside the country and all that, please, when you come back also, as a separate also, a report, value for money and all those. I know the President during the June 16th, he did talk to that in terms of show and tell. But also you, because you are the drivers, you must be able to talk to them, to give us, so that you don't think that you are only flying all over the show. And we hope, I think you are landing, but it's just that we're not too sure when you land and all that. But other than that, Chair, I'm happy with the progress thus far and also the previous year performance in its totality. Thank you.
I'll be quick, Chair. I will not respond to the advice, the recommendations, and observations. We'll note those for future engagements with the committee. Quickly, I think we note the reference to the election. I think we got carried away in wanting to advance that because there are elections and we must try and get young people to go out in their numbers to vote. We made a lot of reference to it, but we note that. Then the question of offices in municipalities, I just want to reflect on. Well, I know that, Chair. I just wanted to reflect on some of the strategies that we have included in the restructuring program. There are a lot of even what you can call general staff that are also located at head office, whereas at head office we're not issuing products and services, it's supposed to be a corporate office. So the intention is not necessarily to trace some of these, but rather capacitate the local office. We have about 198 agreements with the local municipalities where local municipalities have given us office space, but those offices are not functional because they are not staff members. So the intention is to redirect, redeploy rather, some of these employees at the office to branches, to local municipalities, so that they can be full-time staff personnel there, and we increase the reach, the visibility in all the rural areas. So that will be one program. And we are still committed to pursuing the internship program, where we would want to give young people an opportunity to have a workplace experience
by also partly operationalizing some of these local youth offices. The REVIVE program, just to reflect, Member Tuare, that we met, I think, a month and a half ago, we met with Basic Education at a national level. We have been working with the ETD visitor in delivering this program. What we have done is, Honorable Magdalene has indicated, ours was to say there's a gap here of young people who are left to prepare for examination on their own without guidance. Let's try and provide something to assist them to prepare better so that they can pass. But what the National Basic Education has done is they've recognized the progress that we're making and the success of the program. And they've said that they want to plan with us that from next year, they start budgeting for it. We work with them for 3 years to upscale the program and try and reach many more young people across the province with a view that 3 years from now, potentially NYD can exit the program and they can continue to run with it. Similar discussions are happening with higher education. Minister Nzimande has met with our chair of the board, and the thinking also there is that the scholarship fund can potentially be linked with the NFAS and NASFAS program and become one funding, school funding program for the whole of government. So the intention once again is we have seen a gap that scholarships have mainly been reserved for the private sector, but the private sector only goes for the selected few and for the top of the cream. And we saw that there are a lot of young people from rural areas who may not be passing with 100%, but they're passing with 70% and so forth, who are not being given that opportunity to get the best of possible education that they can get. And we plugged in, but potentially higher education will take over this program also, as we then continue to identify new gaps for youth development, we plug in and so forth. Then on travel and accommodation for the metric rights, I think Sefo will speak to it. I've responded to the question of the potential duplication there on that particular program. Now, the restructuring, I'll try to combine my responses for the two honorable members. One is that in terms of the planning, we, as I've indicated at the beginning of the presentation when I was trying to give an overview, was that whilst we knew that we are committing ourselves to a restructuring program, we, PwC, was still doing the work, so we could not anticipate the numbers. Otherwise, we could have easily been accused of predetermining the outcome, and you know, then it means that the process was not objective and whatever. So we didn't know, but what we had anticipated was that because we lose people halfway through the financial year, whatever we had budgeted for their salaries for the remainder of the year will assist us in trying to fund that particular program. But it was at the back of our minds that we will have this particular issue to deal with. Then the other question was, are some of these people on fixed-term contracts? And the answer is yes. Some of them are on fixed-term contracts. In terms of the payout will differ. This is what we have agreed with the unions. What we have agreed with the unions is that we agreed on a voluntary severance package for all employees, regardless of what level you are. That voluntary severance package was agreed as 6 months, equivalent of 6 months' salary. If you agree to work a handover month, which is more like a notice month, because what we did not want to do was to collapse the operations of the organization through the process. We wanted to be given an opportunity, if a person decides to take a voluntary severance package, we wanted to be given an opportunity to plan the transition to ensure that business continuity is not compromised. So we then added an incentive to say, if you agree to work that handover process, we'll add an additional 1 month, which means that the maximum that we can pay is equivalent of 7 months salary for all the employees. For those in fixed-term contracts, what we have said is that we will pay the lesser of whichever is lower. So if your fixed-term contract is lower than the VSP amount, we will not pay the VSP amount, we will pay the remainder of the contract. But if your remainder of your fixed-term contract is higher than the remainder of the army of the VSP, then you will get the VSP. But we are doing this within the confines of the law, because we know there's case law in relation to termination of people with fixed-term contracts. What the good thing for us was that on our contractual agreement, because the public, or rather the case that is, that has made case law is the one of Buthelezi. The Buthelezi case was decided on the fact that what does the contract say? Does it have a provision for termination due to operational requirements? And in our case, our contract does have that particular condition, which then saves us potentially to be exposed, the potential of us having been exposed to the full remainder of some of the contracts. So that is the situation there. In terms of further commitments to or obligations to these members, no, we don't. Our agreement with all the unions, which all of us have signed and agreed, is that benefits only accrue up to the last day of employment. The only concessions that we have made would have been around things like where we have paid for bursaries for some of the staff members, who ordinarily, if they resign, they will have to pay back. We have said that because they are not leaving the organization out of their own accord, we will waiver those kind of requirements. But generally, that's how we're managing the restructuring process this far. Then the nomination process of the board, I think, is a parliamentary process. I'm sure that the parliament will deal with that particular issue. And the voter education, again, we're committed to good governance and clean governance. So when we talk about voter education for us, it's our interest is that young people must define their own future regardless of which political party they are affiliated to. We just want them to participate in the democratic process and define the future of South Africa. So definitely that would be a non-partisan program, as it were. And again, I will leave the issues of the articles of the chairperson, because those would have been expressed in his personal capacity. And then we note all the advice and the recommendations. And I think, as I conclude, I would want to acknowledge that we normally prepare reports for ourselves, whether it's what members were traveling, what is the administration staff that are traveling, in terms of what the travel was about and what has been achieved and what then can be translated into programs. And what we'll then do is we'll then include those as part of a report back to Parliament moving forward. And the rest of the other issues we are taking as advice. In terms of the costing of youth development, we are embarking on a project that we are going to cost the youth development needs in South Africa. What we're going to do is we're going to be working very closely with Statistics South Africa to then begin to dissect South Africa into municipalities, district municipalities. So we'll say, in this municipality, these are how many young people are residing here, how many of them have matric qualifications, how many of them have a diploma degree but unemployed, how many of them are actively participating in entrepreneurship, and so forth and so forth. So once we've mapped it out, we will then cost it to say, we need so much to address this, the needs of this municipality, and then we'll consolidate it into a national cost for youth development in South Africa. So that project is currently underway, but we will work very closely. Yes, we have started it. We're depending more on SSA for the data, but in terms of costing, we think we can handle it in that regard. Yeah. So we are doing that, but maybe let me conclude, Chair, before I allow CFO to just speak to the question of travel and accommodation, by saying that we fully appreciate the assistance and guidance that we have received from the portfolio committee. We think that this journey to get us here to a clean audit for the first time, this journey to get us here to the achievement of the highest performance in terms of meeting our KPIs has been a collective. Your wisdom, your guidance that you have given us together with the board and you know all other stakeholders like the Auditor General who would have from year to year advised us to say this is what we think is wrong, this is what we think we must do. All those culminated into where we are now. But the journey is still long. There's still more to be done and we are fully aware of it. Thank you very much.
Thanks. We are also humbled by your responses, especially acknowledging that it was not an easy journey, mm-hmm.
and also appreciating the support. You know, because at some point you, they either had a choice to pull with us or to pull, to move away, yeah. Not just to move away, to ignore us, you know, but they never did that. They listened. In fact, you know what, you are our practical example, our shining stars, you know. We always say to people, you know, NYDA, because they listen to what the committee always advise them to do. Look at you now. So go forward, sustain this clean audit, work hard. We don't want to be disappointed, because we're going to be a laughing stock. If after the Auditor General has finally announced its month end, eh? After that, then we make motions, we are all happy, then next year is a different thing. So, we are also humbled by your cooperation. On that note, the leadership also of the Minister, and the Deputy Minister, yeah, did you are here, eh? Yeah, tell them, we are humbled by their cooperation and accepting the support that the study, that the portfolio committee has pass the message, né, that we do appreciate, and congratulations once more. No, we are Sekovas, no, we're not saying farewell. We're not going anywhere. We are here to stay. You're going to see this place. For as long as we live, one way or the other we will meet. So Kangana. You know that one way or the other, we are meant to be together. Yeah. You know. So Kangana. So but I look, you come from far. In fact, you know what? I can't wait to hear any of us presenting that motion in the house. You know, it will be done. Yeah, but we must wait for the final report. Né? We don't have to do it. You know, even coupled to the history, members can even talk about the history, where we come from. It wasn't an easy journey. It wasn't at all. But it shows that you listened and you wanted to perfect everything that you are doing. And you also understand that it's not about you. It's about young South Africans. So, on that note, members, let's no, we don't want responses. Responses are closed. Yeah. Is there anything that is between death and life that he did not respond on? Yeah. In writing. So let's continue, ne? This marriage. Sharp.
Thank you. It looks like I'm getting a little bit.